Thanks for pressing play. This is Christopher Lockhead, Follow Your Different, where we aspire to have real conversations that explore the road less traveled. This is a podcast, or dare I say, oddcast, for people who appreciate the different. And our goal, frankly, is to inspire you to follow your different in life and in business. On this episode, my dear friend, Shelley Witzke. Shelley and I worked together as young software salespeople many years ago. And we got to talking a little while ago, and we thought it would be cool to get together and examine a question that a lot of people are quietly asking today, which is, how can men and women really work together? And I know there's been a lot of discussion, particularly since the Me Too movement started, and I think it's an incredibly important discussion. Shelley and I worked together long before the Me Too movement, and we were at an interesting time in our lives. We were both very young people working very closely together for many hours a day. You'll hear I have a tremendous amount of affection and respect and admiration for Shelley. And I think there's a lot of wonderful moments and takeaways in this conversation that I think you'll enjoy. Today, Shelley is a legendary mom, and she runs InsideYourCupboard.com, where she teaches baking, cooking, and more. We are sponsored by our good friends at Oracle NetSuite, and they want to help you turbocharge the growth of your business and stay on top of the critical numbers in your business. Because today, if you want to grow, you got to know. So as a listener to this podcast, NetSuite is offering you a free one-hour growth review with an expert in your industry. Check out netsuite.com/different when you get a chance. And when you're searching or surfing on the interweb, you can also go to lockhead.com and get more on Shelley's wonderful background, how to get in touch with her, and the key takeaways from this episode. Now, hey-ho, let's go.
I have great memories of working with you, Christopher.
Well, I have great memories of working with you, Shelley.
You know what? I was thinking about having this conversation with you, and I thought, you know, I just can't imagine chatting with you without having a lot of giggles. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, well, you know, it might not be very manly, but I'm a giggler too.
All right. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, this topic about can men and women really work together has been in my face for a while now. And, you know, the Me Too movement has sort of woken a lot of us up. And so I just, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, and the other thing, you and I had a very unique work circumstance. And as I thought about that, you know, because we were trapped in a little office together. You and I shared a ton of car time together, plane time together, maybe not quite so much hotel time, but we absolutely went on trips together and stayed in the same hotel and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that the Quora post that I responded to, it just got me thinking a lot about it. And so I'm just curious as to your perspective on, you know, our time together, but more broadly, men and women working together.
Well, you know, it's funny because I mentioned to my husband the other day that we, you know, this topic he reacted immediately. And, you know, it's an issue for them at work. Different people he works with feel really strongly and are very protective of themselves as men. So I find it really, I have to say, I can hardly relate to how they might feel given the nature of how we worked together for quite a few years and so closely, and it was just the two of us. And it never, ever crossed my mind at the time.
Me neither. It never occurred to me that, you know, I talk to guys today who say, oh, you know, if they're one-on-one with women, they feel like they're taking some career risk, and traveling one-on-one with a gal is even riskier. And, you know, I hear these things and I think, I mean, you and I, we were freaking frack. We were like, we were working together, like running a three-legged race together. Right. I mean, we were alone together working a ton. And And we were young. And I don't remember giving it one second of thought either.
Yeah, so why is that? I think maybe that's part of the question. Was it different? I mean, honestly, that was a few years ago, Christopher.
Yeah, it was a lot of years ago. So this Me Too thing was certainly in nobody's mind. It never... No, cut me off.
I've never done that before. I think, you know, what's interesting is that it was in those years that I had my own Me Too movement experience, and yet it never was an impact in how you and I work together. So I wonder if it is dependent on the people, not the generation so much, but the people. And would you like to ask me why I never felt, as a woman working with a man, why I never felt threatened or unsafe?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where you're going. So, yes, why did you, when we were working together, never have those types of feelings?
So, it's interesting because two people can say exactly the same thing, and yet what you hear can be very different. And so let's just, you know, I'm just going to imagine working with you for a second, what it used to be like. And we talked about everything. Your mouth is no cleaner today than it was then. You know.
And you and I are very different. You are not prone to using the F word.
I never use it.
I would call myself a little bit of a spiritual person for sure, but not a religious person. You are obviously a religious person. You maybe are a little bit more conservative on some things than I am. I mean, you and I are, could be considered, at least at a surface level, pretty different.
Yes, that's true. That is very true. We are very different. And so, you know, with you, Christopher, as much as your mouth would run away with you and you would be very vocal about, you know, whatever, it was never with, it never intruded into my, if you will, my virtual bubble. And My bubble, my personal safety was always 100% intact. And I may even go further to say it was more intact because of who you were. And that is a sincere from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Thank you.
Whereas someone else could say something probably a lot more innocuous, but the intention went right inside to my personal space. And I'm not sure how to describe that other than that kind of visual graphic.
It's so, and I think this is the thing that's really hard for people today, myself included. Context is everything, you know? A comedian can walk on stage and the first thing out of their mouth is, you know, good evening, all you assholes. And everybody laughs, right?
Right.
And if the CEO of IBM started off her earnings call and said to the financial analyst, good afternoon, assholes, it would be viewed very differently. And so I think context is part of why this is hard for people. Because to your point, one person can say or do one thing and another person can say or do the exact same thing. And the implication for the person who's experiencing those words or those gestures or whatever can be materially different. And so I think in a lot of ways, that's part of why some men and women are having a hard time today.
Yeah. And
so what's that X factor? What's that, you know, what the French call a certain, I don't know what.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of, I'll talk, you know, from my perspective as a man, but from your perspective as a woman, why is it that, you know, I could say or do things with you that if somebody else said or did similar things might cause a different reaction?
Okay, so one of my thoughts is I knew you in the context of working together and how you would talk about other people. And it was obvious from your actions and your words that you have utmost respect for human beings and women no different. And perhaps that's partly where the trust factor is. Maybe it starts there, maybe it's built there, I don't know. But I knew that I was treated no differently than anyone else in your life. You just simply respect people. And so from that perspective, it never crossed my mind that I would ever have to guard myself or be careful. You know, I think that's a big part of the nature of our relationship and my feeling of safety. If I think of other people that I didn't feel safe with, and had reason not to feel safe with, their patterns of behavior with other people spoke volumes about what I could expect. And, you know, I referred to my own Me Too movement experience, and frankly, it was well known in the organization that this person worked within that that was common. That was just how it was done. And so I think in some respects, our reputations do matter.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm no lawyer, but I've been told that as a man who gets accused of this, if you are wrongly accused, the thing that saves you is your reputation. The thing that saves you is 20 women coming forward saying, I worked with Jim for 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is. Jim's a great guy. He would never do this. He never did this to me. I never heard of this. You know, it's that thing. And that's mm-hmm. the thing I try to tell to men today, particularly younger men who are worried about this. It's like, look, we all have to make our own decisions, of course. But my behavior post Me Too movement is not, I'm more sensitive for sure. And there's things I said back then that I wouldn't say today. And so the Me Too movement has, right? Although I still say pretty outrageous shit, but I have, you know, I'm more sensitive than I used to be. And there's things that I said that came out the wrong way that I wish I didn't say. And I'm sure I said that with you. But I think to your point, people get the context. But more importantly, what I say to young men is, you want right. to cut me off there? Is there something you want to say, Jelly?
Well, I do want to say something. And I just, you know, it kind of makes me a little bit jaded or cynical to think that men, young men are concerned about this. As a woman, it never crossed my mind that I would have to be concerned about what someone might accuse me of. It certainly was on my mind what someone might attempt with me. And so I feel that the common male reaction to the Me Too movement, it's just like, don't even, like, I'm sorry, but it just seems trite and small.
Yeah.
You know, to be wrongly accused is, or the possibility of being wrongly accused pales in comparison to being threatened.
I couldn't agree with you more. Of course, I have zero experience being a woman. But, you know, generally, as a guy who's, you know, 6 feet tall and 195 pounds, I don't have an experience on any kind of regular basis as an adult. You know, it's probably been since I was 13 or 14 where I had any kind of regular experience of a potential physical threat of any kind. As my grandmother used to say to my mother, I'm the kind of kid people cross the street to get away from. And, you know, particularly today, being bald and having tattoos and all that kind of stuff. So I think, look, I don't know, but my guess is the average man has no idea what it's like to be the average woman in business from a physical threat point of view, and or frankly from a discrimination because of your gender point of view. I think we have no idea. I think it's like trying to explain to a human being what it's like to be a fish. We have no freaking clue.
I agree 100%. I've talked to my husband about this. When the Me Too movement really started, you know, a few years ago, I remember sitting in bed, you know, Doug and I sitting there chatting, and I was just like, you know, heated. I was really kind of on a rampage about this, and he was looking at me like I had two heads. Like, it wasn't in his realm of possibility. And I said to him, like, the fact that you don't even understand, you can't even relate, is mind-boggling to me. You haven't lived this. You haven't, you know, walked up the stairs at work with someone running their hands up and down your legs. Like, that in itself just, and that's not even, you know, something I consider part of my Me Too movement, you know, kind of experience. It just happened. And, you know, as a woman being, you know, looked up and down and sized up and, you know, people making comments to you all the time, that's just something that you had to kind of armor up against.
Yeah. I don't think we have any idea. I know I don't. And it's one thing to say I can try my best to have empathy and sympathy and so forth, but it's ridiculous, I think, for all, I can't speak for all men, but, you know, I get the conversation that you have with Doug for sure.
Yeah.
And so I guess, what is it you want men to know about how to be with women in business today? That if you think about all the best guys you ever worked with and all the worst guys you ever worked with on this dimension, what are the things that you would like men to know about how to be comfortable and appropriate with women?
Well, I would say that, you know, just in my experience with people, my own kids, usually men who are inappropriate never feel enough. And then it becomes, you know, this trying to make up for some lack in oneself. And so then you try to, you know, I don't know, make yourself feel better, stronger, bigger, dominant, more dominant, whatever. And in a workplace and just in life, you know, we are separate. Everybody's intact. Everybody's worthy. You know, just live your life. Treat other people as if you're whole and they're whole. And you don't have to break into somebody's space to make yourself feel better. Does that make any sense?
It makes total sense. And look, I'm not the perfect man, for sure, but I don't understand this behavior. This rubbing your leg, walking up the stairs, or any of that. I never did any of that shit. I may have said some dumbass stuff, but I mean, I never grabbed a woman's boob in a nightclub or, you know, any of that shit. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that behavior. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's offensive. It's wrong. It's borderline criminal. Maybe it is criminal. I don't know. I'm no lawyer. And the other thing is, like, as a man, you know, there's this hysterical Jerry Seinfeld routine where he talks about guys honking at women and how essentially when a man honks at a woman, this is a man who has run out of ideas. Because in the history of male and female relationships, there's never once been some guy who honked at some woman who then, like, this woman said, oh, yes, you look like a wonderful guy. Let's go have dinner and have a ton of sex and maybe get married or whatever the fuck the guy is interested in doing with the woman. It doesn't lead to whatever the thing is. And so it's like what woman in the world would you grab her leg while she's walking up the stairs and have that turn into some kind of an outcome that the guy would potentially want. This is not how you hit on a fucking woman. And anyway, the behavior makes no fucking sense to me at all.
Good. That's good. And, you know, people are intact and whole in and of themselves. And, you know, we just want to be respectful of ourselves. We want to be kind to ourselves. We want to be the same way with other people. And then I think then these are not issues.
Yeah. I mean, the way I've tried to think of it is, would I say or do this to a dude? Would I say or do this to my mom? Would I say or do this to my sister? You know, I always thought of you, you know, first and foremost, of course, as a work colleague, and we did great work together. We sold a shit ton of software. We were in a foxhole together for years, and you know, we worked hard, and we had to make the numbers and achieve bonuses and win and lose together, and you know, fight off competitors, and you know, do all the things that, you know, work colleagues, particularly sales work colleagues, do together. That when they're, you know, slaying dragons together in the early days of the software business, right? And so that was my primary feeling about you. And then, you know, on the female male dimension, you know, so professionally, you're my colleague and coworker and partner and all that. And then on the female male thing, it's like, well, you're kind of like my sister in that regard. And end of discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, the other thing is, so if we don't see ourselves, so you know how we talk about racism. So one of the ways that we feel we've gotten somewhere with racism is when we stop even seeing color. It's the same with, you know, male and female and sex in a work environment, where if you don't even see someone's sexuality or their gender or whatever, it just, they're a coworker, then I think everything is great. That's just my opinion. But then, you know, but let's talk about the extra energy that comes, you know, when men and women work together. That's not sexual energy, but it is still male-female energy. And there's a real synergy, I think, that happens. And I don't know, you know, I haven't researched this, so I can only speak anecdotally to it. But I think we work off of each other really well very often. And you brought a different perspective. I brought a different perspective. I mean, there's our own personalities are different as well, but we had a ton of fun. And
I remember us laughing like all the time together about all mm-hmm. sorts of stuff in good times and in bad times.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, I think you're right about male and female energy. And it's probably an overgeneralization. But if you just sort of say, you know, men are generally more aggressive and maybe more quick to jump to something. And women are generally more sort of intuitive and maybe a little bit more sort of people relationship oriented. If you just sort of say, you know, there's these, look, these high level stereotypes exist for a reason. Women have a different orientation. Men and women are fucking different. They are. And it's not just a physical difference, right? They are. And so I think in a work environment, that's good because, you know, you and I would be faced with some situation, good, bad, or somewhere in the middle. And, you know, I might take a more traditional, typical male situation, which is, let's go fucking smash them. And you might say, well, you know, Christopher, maybe we should think about that. And maybe there's a different way or whatever it is, right? That yin and yang dynamic tension.
Yes.
It's really important because, to your point, there's no right answer. Sometimes loving them and being more feminine in an approach to a certain situation in business is the right answer. Sometimes being more masculine is the right answer. But what is, but regardless of the circumstance, a conversation about it is probably always the right answer.
Yeah. And seeing different sides to it. And, you know, seeing the heart of it, seeing the head, the brains of it, I agree. It seems like a long time ago to be able to call to mind any specific, you know, stories or anecdotes, but I do have a very distinct memory that we did really, really work well together. And I think that was a definite part of it.
Well, and the thing I really want to say to you, well, of course, you know how much I love you. But the other thing I really want to say to you is, you know, at a time when we were so young and this topic wasn't really a topic, it's nothing I ever remember talking about with you. I never remember talking about our relationship in this way or any of like this conversation. Do you remember us ever having this kind of a conversation?
No.
And so we just got into, and you know, maybe this is too West Coasty of a word, but I'll use it anyway. You know, we got into a flow together. We worked incredibly well together. We were frickin' frack. We were very different. Even if you completely forget the male female thing, you know, on a lot of dimensions, you and I are very, very different, but we did have a shared set of core values, and we did certainly have a shared mission around trying to build a great company and meet our numbers and take care of our customers and our dealers and all that stuff. I remember us never having any kind of a core values, argument or anything like that. Like what's right and what's wrong. We debated how to go about things or how to, you know, what stance to take on things. But I don't ever remember a sort of you doing something morally that was on a line, or you ever looking at me. You know, it felt like we were always aligned on that. And so that's an interesting thing to look back on for me with you, Shelley, is just you and I got into a flow, and it, for a long time, it was just the two of us in the office. And we worked sometimes what felt like, 20 fucking 8 hours a day together. And cell phones were still pretty new, but we talked, when we weren't physically together. I mean, would we go 3 days without talking to each other?
No.
I mean, it'd be unusual for us to go 2 days without talking to each other, right?
Yeah. I think we were in touch a lot. It's kind of weird, actually, when you think about this.
Weird in what sense?
Well, that we worked so closely together and there was just the two of us. I mean, we had a boss that would fly in from, Orange County every so often, or we'd go down there or whatever. And I remember, being on the road and working with a lot of different firms and, dealers and customers and, we were out and about a lot. Sometimes I was, you were with me a lot of the times I was on my own, but we collaborated, we strategized, we would review things together. And no, I back to the core values, you might be onto something there, because I think that was a common foundation that we worked from.
Yeah. The other thing that I remember, and I'll be curious as to your memory, I don't ever remember a nanosecond, a word, a half a word out of my ex-wife, her saying anything about the fact that you and I worked together, that we were male and female. And it's not like we worked in an office with, 200 other people. It was you and I mean, we grew after a point in time, but for much of our working life together, it was just you and I. In that little office. And so I don't ever remember my ex-wife ever saying anything about our relationship or a concern or like nothing, zero, nada. It wasn't even, it would have come out of, at least in my relationship with her, it would have come out of completely left field.
Right. Yeah. And I would say exactly the same. Doug and I, it was never an issue in our relationship. He completely trusted our relationship.
Well, and the other cool thing I remember, and maybe this is something that men and women can take from this. Beatrice, you think the core values issue is important, don't you, my love? but the other thing I remember is you knew my ex-wife. I knew Doug. I seem to remember us having dinner together, maybe not a ton, but more than once. I certainly interacted with Doug on a semi-regular basis for one reason or another. I would meet you at your house for something, or he would come to the office for something, or whatever. He was around, and I would ask you how it was going with him and what you guys were up to, and et cetera, et cetera. And you did the same thing with Christine and I. And I remember really liking Doug and thinking he was a super sweet guy and thinking you guys made a great couple. And so I don't know, maybe if that's also part of it where, you and I having exposure to our partners and our partners getting a sense of each other and all that. But it is a weird thing now when I think back, or weird, I don't know what the right word is, maybe a thing to remark on, that here you had two people in their early to mid-20s working together like maniacs, crazy hours, traveling, you know, all the things that salespeople do. The fact that you and I were male and female was never even anything that you and I ever even talked about. And B, it was never anything that even came up in our conversations with our spouses.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And I don't know that that would be the same today. I mean, I think our relationship, if you and I were to work together again, we would work together just as easily and with no hesitation.
No question. No doubt in my mind. Not a nanosecond of doubt.
Yeah. So why is that? Why is it, you know, how do, you know, my sons, my daughter, like how do they navigate this in the workplace today? You know, do they, I don't know that it worries them. I don't know.
You know, a lot of my life I have felt like I'm trying to be the man that my mother thinks I am. I'm trying to be the man that my father thinks I am, that my grandparents thought I was, you know? And so I want to make those people proud and I want to be proud of myself. And so I think if we set a context that says, hey, I'm going to try to conduct myself in a way that's professional and where I can be proud of myself, then I think the likelihood you get into trouble is very low. I don't know. There's so much complexity around this issue, but at some level, human relationships, I go back and forth. On one hand, it's complex and there's layers and context and all this other stuff. And then the other part of my mind goes, hey, this is really fucking simple. People know the difference. In my experience with women know the difference between a creep, a weirdo, an asshole, a manipulator, a discriminator. They know the difference between that person and, in my case, somebody who's loud and gregarious and swears.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Huh. You know, while you're saying this about your, you know, who you would want to be for your grandmother, in my life, you know, I kind of have thought, okay, so, you know, maybe it's the age I'm at, but, you know, when my kids are cleaning out the house when I'm gone, I don't want there to be surprises.
Yeah.
Exactly. I want them to have the confidence that the person that they knew is the person that everyone else knew.
Yeah. And that is really who you are, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No skeletons in the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, look, maybe it makes you and I naive or something, but I think, one of the things I said in this article, in this Quora post, was just that good men need to stand up for good women and vice versa. And I think it's actually, if you strip a woman, maybe I'm naive and I'm no psychologist or psychiatrist or any of that shit, but if you strip it all away, I don't know that it's that hard for men and women to work together or that it needs to be. It's like, hey, fuck, treat each other as colleagues, do legendary work, and then, you know, let the relationship flourish in the context that it is, which is a work relationship. You and I developed a friendship outside of work, even though we haven't stayed in, you know, a massive amount of touch. There is no point in the time since we worked together to this day where had you called me and said you needed something or you were in trouble or one of your children or I don't, or Doug, or I don't fucking know what, that I wouldn't have sprung into action. I would have done whatever I could to support you because as corny as it sounds, I love you. Mm-hmm. And I also think that's, you know, this is the other thing, this separation of your work life and your life. Work to me is personal. Our relationship's personal. And the fact that we got so much done and worked so well together is because we developed a strong relationship that was a caring relationship that wasn't just quote unquote business. But I'd be curious as to how you think about it.
Well, as you're speaking, the word respect just keeps resounding with me. And, I don't feel any differently about this than you do. And, you know, we respected each other. We learned to respect each other. I would say that. And, you respected who I am as a person and as a coworker. And, you don't just love somebody, and I'm speaking, not an eros kind of love, but I don't know what the right word is, but you don't have love and respect for somebody and a deep care for somebody because of superficial experiences. You know, it's when you go through fire together and when your core values are threatened and you work together and you make decisions that are tough decisions. When you see someone hurt from an experience or how they were treated by someone else and how they show up for themselves and for your organization, that causes someone to have a deep respect and love for someone else. And, when you work together, it matters not, they're people at the end of the day. And,
Yeah. Yeah. And I just hope we can foster an environment where that happens more. And I think probably on balance, 99.9% of the Me Too movement has been a good thing because I think it's woken a lot of us up. Hopefully it's given an opportunity for women to stand up. And I think it's woken a lot of us men up to A, there's certain things that some of us might have said differently. And B, I'm ashamed of myself in that you and I worked together for all those years. I didn't have any radar for maybe this was something going on for you. And I didn't really have radar for other women in my career that this shit was really going on because I wasn't that aware of it. And I'm sort of mad at myself and embarrassed because if I had known that Me Too shit was going on for you or for any other woman that I worked with, the fucking guy doing it would have been drinking through a straw for a very long time.
Yeah. And, I do appreciate, the sentiment in that, the desire to protect someone else from hurt and harm. It's funny, because just simply the awareness that it is an issue, I think is the biggest, for me at least, in my experience, is the biggest blessing of this movement. Because, for my husband and for you, you were completely oblivious. And so you didn't know what you didn't know. And now you know. And now you know that not everybody treats everybody well. And that, some people use sex to get, their business aims and objectives accomplished, which is ridiculous. But it is some people try to use that. And when you don't have a voice and you don't have it stays in the dark and nobody knows and your career is affected. So when I was telling you about this particular situation, at a high level, and I said I didn't even realize at the time when I pushed back to this particular situation, I think I was naive enough to not even be aware that it would impact, my sales. And it did in a very big way. So I don't know. Different people have different experiences, but for me, I just reacted and, paid for it later on. And I don't think I told very many people, if anybody, because it just was something that happened and I didn't understand the ramification. And so then, as a salesperson and as a woman, my sales went down. Well, I didn't have a good reason for that, and so, possibly people's careers are affected by these things and men don't even understand why they're affected.
That's right. And I don't want to go anywhere you don't want to go, Shelley. And if you don't want to go here, then just tell me. But you didn't tell me that this incident had happened. And I'm curious about why you didn't.
I don't, it's so long ago that I'm not sure that I can accurately tell you, but in my memory, I was disgusted. I was like affronted, but it wasn't anything hugely out of the norm. And like I said to you, I think I was naive enough to not really understand the ramification that would happen. And and maybe had I understood that, you're going to lose 40% of your business or whatever it was, but it was probably close to that.
Yep.
I might have spoken up, but yeah. I didn't know. And I just thought this was a kind of a one-off kind of thing, but no, for that person, my unwillingness to acquiesce to whatever that person wanted, there was a direct, so now I'm taking business away from you if you're not going to play by my rules. It's just stupid.
And what a fucked up thing. Like, to me, that's the most fucked up thing in business. It's like, hey, if you don't sleep with me, I'm going to stop buying from you.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine. Knowing what we now know, of course, data would be hard to get real data, but what we know today is there's a meaningful percentage of sales women who have gone through that. And it happened for you when you and I were working together and I didn't know and you just sucked it up and kept going. Mm-hmm. And I would have had a really good time punching him in the face.
Well, you know what? It's not something that has necessarily gone away. It's, I think it's, we bring it out in the open now more than we did. But it still is an issue. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day and they're like, oh, that still happens, So.
Yeah. I just hope the good guys involved, when this stuff gets surfaced and women come forward, do the right thing. And I'm not suggesting that there isn't some due process that this should go through and all that, but here's what I know for fucking sure. If at that time you had felt comfortable coming to me, I wouldn't have doubted you for a nanosecond. Because to our discussion earlier on context and on men being quote unquote wrongfully accused, I think the same thing's true with women when they come forward. I would have known. As a matter of fact, it never would have occurred to me for a nanosecond that you would have been pulling a Jussie Smollett or whatever that guy's name is, who now appears to have staged his own attack. It never would have even occurred to me that you were being disingenuous. I would have immediately gone to, I'm going to fucking tear his head off.
Yeah, well, and I think that's, if I have a request or a wish from my own experience, it's for people to believe other people. Nobody wants to, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but this stuff is stupid enough that you wouldn't make it up normally. And now there are some people who create all kinds of, you know, whatever weird stories, and they believe them and they try to get other people to believe them. But those are the minority. I think that there's so much of this stuff that goes on that men are oblivious to, that the bigger request and wish I have is that men would naturally believe and, you know, authenticate it rather than dismiss it and think that somehow women, there's some kind of mission that women have to besmirch men. They don't. You know, people are people, and, you know, having this as a open discussion. And you know, one of the things I taught my kids was people who do this kind of creepy stuff try to do it in the dark, and or you know, with people who won't speak up. And so I actually role played, this might sound crazy, but I role played with my kids, you know, let's pretend somebody does this, and this is what you're going to practice doing. And the big thing that I taught them to do was say really loudly, "Oh, what a creep. Don't you do that." Because, you know, in so speaking, that person will never approach that person. Maybe I'm not making sense, but, you know, as a kid, or as a woman in a compromising situation, when you speak up loudly, the perpetrator is going to back off.
Yeah. In general, making a lot of noise when being attacked is a very, very good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, speaking up, even, you know, if you're not feeling comfortable, speak up about it in a, assume the best of the person until they prove otherwise. But say, you know, you can speak up for yourself and say, "I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm feeling kind of weirded out here. Like, is everything okay? Am I, you know?" And the person will back off if they really did have ulterior motives.
And I'd be curious if you talk to your kids about this. I talk to young people about this as well, male and female for that matter, is, you know, we all have that little warning voice that goes off in our head. Pay attention to that voice. If an individual is giving you a bit of a weird vibe and you're not feeling safe or you're not feeling comfortable or whatever it is, trust that vibe. Mm-hmm. Big time. You know, this guy who you had this incident with, you had a bit of a vibe about him, did you not?
And he had a reputation. There was a, for the most part, he was fine to work with, but, you know, yeah, I mean, his reputation preceded him, but also there's just this underlying little nuance that you're kind of always just putting down or ignoring. And I think what you're saying is don't ignore it. And I would agree with you.
Yeah. And I think I've gotten even more sensitive to that. I had a situation, this is a small situation, in the last 6 or 9 months somewhere, where I was at a corporate event, a conference, and I needed a key to get into, I think it was like a speaker ready room or something like that. I was speaking at this event. Anyway, the gal who was in charge of the event had the key, and I was in my hotel room, and we were texting about how to get the key. And she said to me, "Oh, well, you know, I can bring it to your room." And I was about to text back, "Oh, great." And then I thought, you know what? Why don't you just bring it to the lobby or whatever, the check-in area, and leave my name on. I'll pick it up there. Because a little trigger went off in my head. In the past, I would have said, absolutely. And, you know, nothing weird would have happened and whatever. But, oh, BB likes this story, I think. But now, knowing what I know and trying to be a little bit more aware, there was a little trigger that went off in my head that thought, even though she sort of suggested, you know, I could bring it to your room. And I knew she didn't mean anything by it. You know, there's no way. I know this gal well enough to know there was no weirdness going on. But there was this little thing. And I thought, you know what? I don't want to go anywhere near sending a weird message. And so I just said, yeah, why don't you drop it off at the main, you know, reception area, the little check-in area or whatever. I'll pick it up there. So, you know, I think trying to be a little bit more aware, making sure, you know, dude, let's make sure I'm not being a creep. I think every guy today has to ask himself that question, even if they never mean to.
Yeah. And good. It's not going to hurt anybody. I mean, respecting people, believing the best in people is always a good way to be. And, you know, comporting ourselves in a way that shows that we respect people is the way we need to live.
Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap this conversation, Shelley?
I don't think so. Other than, you know what? I just have a ton of love for you, Christopher. And, you know, I love your follow, you're different. I, you know, you've been beating this drum for as long as I've known you, but maybe more wholeheartedly and with a lot more conviction, perhaps. And so my hat's off to you. Way to go.
Well, thank you. And I'm so glad, you know, that we're reconnected. And I really, really deeply appreciate you being willing to have this conversation with me. I love you.
Anytime. Likewise, my friend.
There she is, Shelley Witzke. I'm so glad we had this conversation. And candidly, I'm really glad that we had the record button going. I hope you enjoyed Shelley as much as I did and do. And I hope that all of us can continue the conversation, men and women, about how we can work together powerfully, respectfully, and most importantly, do legendary work together. Now, speaking of things that are legendary and that works, my friends at NetSuite want to help you master your growth. Thousands of super high growth startups, and believe it or not, nonprofits alike, rely on NetSuite. Because NetSuite is the business management software that can handle every aspect of your business, from how you deal with customers, to omni-channel or multi-channel sales, to expanding across global markets, different languages, different currencies. NetSuite grows with you from the garage to the IPO and beyond. NetSuite is really the one platform for every component, from customers and sales, finance, inventory, of course, accounting, order management, and even HR. And it's available to you, and interestingly, surprisingly, more cost-effective than you might expect. So as a regular listener to this podcast, they're providing you with a unique opportunity. And if you've been a listener for a while, and you've heard me say this more than once, maybe today want to take NetSuite up on their offer and go to netsuite.com/different. And while you're there, you'll be able to set up a free 1-hour growth review with an expert in your industry. That's netsuite.com/different. All right. We would like to thank Shelley's awesome solopreneur business, InsideYourCupboards.com. Check her out when you get a chance. The amazing nonprofit, OneLifeFullyLived.org. Helping you dream, plan, and live your best life. Our annual conference is coming up in October 2019 in beautiful Long Beach, California. There'll be many legendary speakers there, and somehow they're going to let me speak too. And if you want to come join us, I'd love to have you. Go to onelifefullylived.org/clockhead for more information. My friends at Bottleneck Online want to help you get back time and help you scale yourself. So check out the power of a virtual assistant today at bottleneck.online. Now, it's, at least in this part of the world, it's spring and summertime, and nothing tastes like summer more than Fisher's Popcorn. In Ocean City, Maryland, right on the boardwalk, Fisher's has been around since 1937. And listen, if you're a small entrepreneur and you've been in business since 1937, you must be doing something right. So either visit Fisher's in Ocean City, Maryland, or go to fisherspopcorn.com. Also want to tell you about a podcast I love. It's called Win Happy, hosted by my dear friend Greg Canty. He's a wonderful guy. He's a partner at Fusion in Ireland. They do amazing PR and marketing work. Check out the Win Happy podcast. And speaking of other things to check out that I think are awesome, check out GrowWire.com. Stories of innovation. This is what legendary entrepreneurs are reading today. Check out GrowWire.com. And the official sock provider to this podcast is John's Crazy Socks. Are you still wearing boring socks? It's time to snazz it up. Most guys, we don't wear ties anymore. So what do we have to get snazzy with? Maybe our socks and maybe a pocket hanky or something like that. But why not check out John's Crazy Socks today? And speaking of awesome organizations, Kiva.org. They are the nonprofit helping small entrepreneurs in the developing world via interest-free microfinance loans. You can participate at Kiva.org today. All right, I need to remind you that today's information is provided to you solely for informational purposes. This podcast is clearly taped in a studio that does contain nuts and is the sole property of the Lockhead Oddcast Network. All rights do remain perturbed. This episode was produced by the nicest man in podcasting, Jamie J, and edited by Sarah Parrish and Mike D. Don't forget to teach faking, support global happiness, tell two people you love about two podcasts you love. And remember, if they've got Siri enabled on their iPhone, you can literally say, "Hey, Siri, subscribe to Christopher Lockhead, Follow Your Different," and she'll do that for you. It's that easy now. Don't forget to listen to The Tragically Hip, only by pasture-raised free-range eggs from happy free-range hens. Thank you, Candy Dandy. Love you, Mom and Dad. Hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go to Harvey Weinstein. Sorry, Harv, we just ran out of time for you. That's it. Thank you so much for investing part of your life with me. And till next time, stay legendary, and of course, follow your different.